Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carrillo.
This is Pam Shriver.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
This is Yannick Noah, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Well, when we left you yesterday, after some very, very dodgy shout-outs not overseen by David Law, it had already been the most breathless and exhilarating Grand Slam day that either I or Matt could remember. It's possible that David Law, with his more exhaustive and long memory, might have been able to set us straight on that. But in terms of me and Matt, it was about as dramatic as it gets, and somehow it found a way to get more dramatic after we stopped recording. When we left, you, Naomi Osaka wasn't quite cruising. It was a competitive match against 18-year-old Leila Fernandez, and it continued to be a competitive match, but one that looked like it was going to script. Naomi Osaka was a setup, a break to the good, and serving for the match, and barring a few moments from that point onwards, she somewhat fell apart. Now, that's a slightly reductive take on what happened. Leila Fernandez was and is extraordinary. I will never understand biomechanically how she produces the power that she does. But she does it. So there's a lot more to that loss than just Naomi Osaka being not right. But Matt, Naomi Osaka is not right, and we could see that in the match. It was a very, almost as soon as she lost the game to serve for the match, there was a defeat about her body language, wasn't there? Even though she was very much in it at that stage, and she was still playing some very, very good tennis, somehow mentally it all seemed to go away so quickly. We wondered if she would come to press. She did come to press. And there were a lot of arresting and distressing and saddening quotes in there. Probably the headline one is hearing her say, "I feel like when I win, I don't feel happy, I feel relief. And when I lose, I feel very sad. And I don't think that's normal." And then through tears, she said she would be taking a break from tennis, and she wasn't sure when she would be playing next. And at that point, she pulled her visor down, was very, very clearly crying and struggling. Should say that she was given the opportunity to duck out of that press conference at a couple of moments. She insisted she wanted to get that out there. But it was very, very tough to watch, Matt.
It was, yeah. It was all quite tough to watch, you know, starting, as you said, with that moment she lost her serve at 6-5 in the second set. Just as you've described, as soon as she cracked and lost her serve, it was clear that it was such a thin layer of confidence that she'd had through the match. I don't think she'd been returning particularly well, but she'd been faultless on serve. She hadn't faced a break point up until that point. But then in that tie break, I think she went 5-love down in it. She tossed her racket. There was a lot of stress. She was far from her best. And she went on to lose the match. And then the press conference was a very tough watch. It actually reminded me, very different circumstances, very different reasons, but it reminded me of Andy Murray's press conference at the 2019 Australian Open, that one at the start of the tournament, because she so clearly had something she wanted to say. And that was the defining feature of that Murray press conference. It was him telling the world something he'd been sort of living with for months. She answered four questions in English first, was pretty somber, but pretty composed as well. And then the question which prompted that answer that you've just read out was in Japanese. I'm not actually sure what the question was, but Osaka takes questions in Japanese and she answers them in English. And that was her answer. And sort of while she was giving that answer, she looked over to someone, I'm guessing her agent, certainly someone in her team, to say, I want to say what we talked about in the hallway. You know, they'd clearly had a discussion before the press conference. She had something she wanted to say and she said it. You know, she told people she's not okay. She wants to take a break from the sport. It was really hard for her to get it out. There were lots of pauses when she said that. But, you know, what a brave thing to do, to say it. And it was a really stunning moment, actually. And I think shocking at the time, but I think we don't know when we'll see Naomi Osaka again on the tennis court. We don't know if we will see Naomi Osaka again. I think the future will also dictate kind of how we see this press conference.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, there's, I mean, I find myself wondering, and we've no real way of answering this, how many top tennis players, not necessarily top, but I expect it's exaggerated at the top, have felt this way and not felt able or inclined to express it and be open about it in the way that Naomi Osaka has. I mean, it's lonely at the top. That's a cliche about sport, isn't it? And it's sort of a throwaway. Yeah, that's, you know, the small price that you have to pay, but maybe it's not that small a price. And I'm not saying there's not stuff very unique to Naomi Osaka and her experience going on, but what definitely is unique is the way she is opening up about it. And I was incredibly brave, I think. Whatever you might think about all the particulars of everything that sort of unfolded with her relationship with the press and with the sport over the past few months, that was a very brave thing to do. And it's not for us to comment on whether taking a break is the right thing. If she thinks it's the right thing, then it's the right thing to do and tennis will miss her. But I don't want to watch her playing tennis being unhappy. Don't want to watch anyone being unhappy. So we absolutely wish her well, as we do David Law, who you'll notice is not just staying silent. I haven't gagged him. He is absent for another night. He's taking it easy. He's okay, folks. He welcomes any and all messages of wellness.
Yes.
He's in a conscious enough state to gladly accept and receive well wishes, but not in a well enough state to coherently contribute to the podcast. So hello, David.
We very much hope he's currently asleep.
We do. Annoyingly, just to wrap up events from last night, somehow, despite living in a sort of fever dream, he still managed to ace the predictions.
He did, didn't
he? Which is annoying. because Francis Tiafoe beat Andrei Rublev, which I like Rublev, but I love that Francis Tiafoe said, I know my draw, I know I've got Rublev, I'm coming for you, Rublev, and did it.
Totally.
It's super cool.
Yeah, it is. And he's got star quality,
and it seems like the slam that's all about star quality, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. There was one point where he broke in the third set, and he held the volley position that he'd won the point with all the way to the chair, just sort of sprinted to the chair in a volley pose and got the crowd
there
involved.
There are certain players that if they did that, I would want to punch them in the face. but definitely not Francis Tiafoe.
No, absolutely. And, you know, he doesn't need a bathroom break to change his clothes, does he? In fact, he took his shirt off for his post-match celebration. And I just think it was a real really cool moment for him. I think he's back in the fourth round at the US Open, second year in a row. And actually, that feels like a significant result. On the same evening that Félix Auger-Aliassime beat Roberto Bautista Agut in five sets, we lost yesterday from that half of the draw, Tsitsipas, Bautista Agut, and Rublev.
Are you going to tell me something that they all have in common?
I just think it's significant for the tournament in terms of one of Alcaraz.
There will be an unseeded semi-finalist, won't there?
There's going to be a very unlikely semi-finalist. And, you know, Medvedev was already the favourite in that half of the draw, but I just think the path has really cleared for him. There are a lot of threats. All these players are playing very well, of course, but none of them have the experience that a Tsitsipas, a Bautista Agut, and even maybe not quite Rublev in slams, but just the sheer amount of winning Rublev has done just feels like he's dangerous.
He's Jim Courier's favourite for the tournament, Medvedev.
He is.
Great line in the Prime Video coverage today. There'll be more on Djokovic, obviously, a bit later on in the show. In fact, there'll be more on on all of today's events just later on in the show. But just, Matt, a quick word on Leila Fernandez.
Mm.
She's so cool. I know we've said that about a lot of people over the past kind of 24-48 hours. And I'd seen her play before. I'd been really taken with her play before, but I still didn't know she had what she showed us last night, not just in terms of her play, which is dazzling. You don't know where the ball is going when it comes off her racket. It's like a magic wand. But I thought the interview she gave to Mary Jo Fernandez on the court afterwards was brilliant. I think I said to you, she seems at once completely surprised and sort of unbothered by the victory. She seemed in disbelief, in a state of disbelief, and also just, well, yeah, of course.
She was giggling through the interview and yet also coming out with these killer lines like, yeah, I believed I could win from the start of the match.
Yeah, Mary Jo Fernandez said, at what point in that match, bearing in mind she was a set and her opponent was serving for the match, her opponent, the defending champion, was serving for the match. And Mary Jo Fernandez said, at what point did you start believing that you could win? She said, before, right at the start. And she said it with such conviction and poise, and there was such a fire in her.
Yeah, there is. And from the moment she broke back to get the second set level, she was completely nerveless, I felt. You know, you said when she stepped up to serve for the match, she's going to serve this out. There was just no hint that she wasn't going to. She was, yeah, just nerveless, but she also embraced the moment. You know, she was, I think, very aware of what an occasion this was and how much the crowd were responding to her. And yeah, I mean, her tennis, just as you said right at the top of the podcast, how she generates the power with A, the very slight frame that she has, and B, the take back on the forehand. I mean, there practically isn't a take back. And that, I think, is what gives it the disguise that you're talking about. You just do not know where that shot is going. She's very, very unique playing style, and that can really bother opponents. I think, you know, she's 18, one of many 18-year-olds making waves in this tournament, and we're going to be seeing so much more of her.
Well, Matt, you have led me on very nicely. Just when we thought, you know, we'd ridden out the wave of 18-year-old sensations yesterday, Emma Raducanu, 18 years old, from Great Britain, we knew she was good. This is not the first time she's reached the fourth round of a Grand Slam. She did it just a few weeks ago. And yet my jaw is still on the floor from what she did earlier, who she showed us that she was earlier, Matt. 6-love, 6-1 over Sara Cerebes Tormo, who is, as I think we said on last night's podcast, arguably the most improved player of the year on the WTA Tour, and a player that I think commands real locker room respect as, win or lose, she makes you work for it. Nothing comes easy. And yet, love and won looks awfully easy. Emma Raducanu made tennis on the biggest stage with the highest stakes look so easy today. And as I said on the Prime Video coverage, we've officially reached the stage where I'm no longer going to police any of the pundits for getting too overexcited about Emma Raducanu, for overhyping her. All bets are off now. I'm not sure there is such a thing as overhyping. I mean, it is what it is. Her talent was there for all to see today, and it is dazzling.
Yeah, I mean, speaking of overhyping, I came up with a line that put her in the company of Chris Evert, Monica Seles, and Jennifer Capriati. And I sort of reluctantly tweeted it, but then I thought, no, I am going to tweet it, because it's just a fact what she's achieved, and that is reaching the fourth round of both her first two Grand Slams is something that those players have achieved. You know, I was really going through the great names in tennis, looking how they did in their first couple of slams, and those were the ones I found who matched it.
This isn't even Matt Stat, for folks. This is just an auxiliary stat that Matt has in his pocket. If you want the real stat, sign up to the newsletter.
But yeah, I mean, the result is a surprise to me. I thought Cerebos Tormo would win. I thought it would be very close. The manner of the result and the manner of her victory is completely astonishing to me. I mean, she just didn't allow Cerebos Tormo to do what she does. You know, Cerebos Tormo gets you in her grip and just gradually sort of strangles you and ensnares you. And Raducanu just didn't allow that. She was taking the ball at the top of the bounce and just pummeling ground strokes for winners. She just smothered Cerebos Tormo. And, you know, everything was going through my mind of watching Carlos Alcaraz do the same to Tsitsipas for four games on the Arthur Ashe Stadium. And I kind of had Jim Courier's voice ringing in my ear, him saying, it's not sustainable, it's not sustainable. Raducanu sustained it for the whole match. It was an unbelievable performance. She pulled the trigger at the right time in all the rallies, sometimes early, sometimes building them.
Always picks the right shot.
Always.
And that is a superpower. The more, I'm going to sound so long in the tooth now, but David's not here, so someone has to. The more tennis I watch, the more years I work in tennis, the more I realise that is the superpower. I'm not sure that's something you can really learn or teach. You can maybe develop it, but if you don't have the chip, then you're going to struggle. You can look brilliant, but it's the difference maker at the top, and she's got the chip.
Yeah, and she's got time on the ball. I always think that's another similarity between all top players. They just have an ability to sort of slow the match down when the ball's on their side of the court.
It's an optical illusion, isn't it?
And speed it up when it's on the other.
Murray
when
does
it's on
that.
Their opponents. He does it brilliantly. And she just went on the court with such a clear plan. On the prime footage before the match, she was showing some of her practicing. And what was clear in that practice was that she was taking on sort of drive volleys. And I hadn't thought about it, but that was just the perfect tactic for facing Cerebos Tormo, because if you go with power, she might slice it and get a high ball. And the number of shots she took out the air and took early was just so, so impressive.
She gave a line afterwards, didn't she? A brilliant line. I think in the press conference, she gave a lovely interview to us on Prime, but she gave some sort of more reflective lines in press about how she really wanted to join the Alcaraz-Fernandez gang.
Yes. Yeah, she said that seeing those two 18-year-olds do what they did yesterday motivated her. And, you know, she wanted to be part of that story in this tournament. And she's got a real game mode in her press conference. You know, she does give good lines, but she's also quite detached from the emotion of it. You know, she recognises how incredible it is, and she's obviously absolutely delighted, and that comes through. But she's not getting caught up in it either. She's very focused on the next match. She wasn't getting into any chat about Ash Barty. It was all, well, Ash Barty hasn't won yet, and I'm through to the fourth round, and I'll talk about that when I know who the opponent is. You know, it was sort of just beyond just beyond her years, really, in terms of knowing how to approach a tournament, I think.
And live update thereof, Ash Barty trails by a set to Shelby Rogers. She is a breakup in the second set with Love 30 on the Rogers serve. And I'll leave any conclusive statements about where this match might be going out for now, because stitched myself right up on last night's podcast, didn't I, with Osaka and Fernandez goings on. But I think we'd all still be backing Barty to come through at this stage and set up that Raducanu clash. But even if she does, I give Raducanu a chance.
Definitely. Yeah, definitely.
I mean, I don't know how you could see that performance today and not give her a chance against literally anyone. World number one or not.
Yeah, I mean, I had a look and the average rank of opponents that Raducanu has faced in these Grand Slam runs, Wimbledon and here, is 83. So you can look at that and think, okay. But Saras-Ribas Tormo is 41. And she thrashed Saras-Ribas Tormo.
And Saras-Ribas Tormo beat Barty at the Olympics.
Yeah. Mm.
She's no joke, Saras-Ribas Tormo.
She'd beaten Mukova in this tournament.
Mm.
Yeah, it was an unbelievable performance. And look, I can't believe I'm saying this, but Billie Jean King was sitting where you were sitting. And she's convinced Raducanu is going right to the top of the game. Yeah. And, you know, she saw that before Raducanu had produced these displays at the US Open. And in Raducanu's words, she's playing better now than she is at Wimbledon. And I would definitely agree with that. She seems to be getting better every match, really.
Truly astonishing. Absolutely astonishing. And she continues to just light up New York. I mean, I think half of New York must have a selfie with Emma Raducanu on their phone by now.
I think tournament organisers need to sort of make an addendum to the order of play. And if you follow Raducanu onto court, you need a not before she's signed 1,000 autographs and taken 1,000 selfies with, you know, with everyone in the stadium.
She was doing it within moments of winning.
Oh, it was the first thing she did.
Yeah. And yet somehow there's not a vanity to it.
No.
I don't know.
How does she do that?
I don't know. How is she not annoying? I don't know. She's dazzling. She's an absolute joy to have to talk about. Not on the podcast and the Prime Video coverage. She just makes me smile. Mm. Makes me smile. And it's wonderful. And I don't think that's just because she's British. You know, I think we'd maybe dedicate a tiny bit less airtime to her. But I do think we'd be talking about her in these terms wherever she was from. But we're really excited that she's British as well.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right.
What else happened today? Should we start with the Arthur Ashe Stadium? Should we go to Novak Djokovic and a 17th consecutive win over Kei Nishikori, which sounds bad for Kei Nishikori, doesn't it?
But someone does beat Kei Nishikori 17 times in a row.
It sounds bad, but there was more to it than that today, wasn't there? There was a lot more to it.
There really was. He'd lost 18 sets in a row to Djokovic on a hard court, Kei Nishikori, and he won.
Okay, still not sounding great.
And Matt, he won the first set today.
Okay.
So that in itself felt like a triumph. And the next three sets were pretty one-sided on the scoreline, but were certainly not one-sided in how they played out. He was really challenged today, Novak Djokovic. It was his third longest match in a Grand Slam this season, you know, on his quest to complete the Grand Slam. Only his French Open semi-final against Nadal and his French Open final against Tsitsipas were longer than this, you know, and he's had some tough matches. He, especially in Australia, all of his wins at Wimbledon were pretty straightforward, but in Australia he had some tough ones, and this was longer. And you know, part of that was Nishikori has a similar style, and they have some quite long rallies. And but yeah, he really was tested. I thought he was quite flat in the first set, but then as soon as he broke at the start of the second, he let out this incredible roar, and he was just very engaged from that point on. He sort of recognized the challenge and went to meet it. I don't think he played his absolute best today. I think there was some vulnerabilities. I actually went to the Nishikori press conference afterwards, and I was the only person asking a question in English.
Oh.
It's always a difficult spot to be in.
You were the press conference.
Yes.
But you had a one-on-one with Kei Nishikori today.
Well, I said to him, you know, you've played Novak Djokovic a lot, but you've never played him when he's going for what he's going for. Could you sense any...
Oh, great question.
Could you sense any difference about him, you know? I was basically saying, how come you managed to win a set this time when you haven't won a set in the past? And he said... No, like honestly, it felt as hard as it always is to face Novak Djokovic, but he did say he must be feeling the pressure. You know, he just must, you know, inside. And I think we have seen that a little bit at this tournament so far. I think it's really going to come out when he's really testing those latter rounds. But already we're seeing how difficult this is for Novak Djokovic. The first round in particular, again today against Nishikori, he was pushed more than he normally is against Nishikori. So there is an indicator there, I think, of the stress Djokovic is feeling.
He's going to play an American in the next round. Ooh. Jensen Brooksby. Well, actually, I've gone a bit early there, Matt. It is 40-15, 5-3 to Jensen Brooksby in the fifth set over Aslan Karatsev. We're not re-recording this podcast, if that's wrong, but I believe in you, Jensen. And I say that not only because Jensen Brooksby is fun. That's the, you know, that's the vogue thing to say, isn't it? How fun Jensen Brooksby is. And he is. He's brilliant. But because the crowd is going to be heavily against Novak Djokovic once again for that matchup. Oh, he's won, thank goodness. Sorry, Aslan. And that was a feature of the match today. It wasn't a feature of the result. I don't think it affected Novak Djokovic's tennis, but it certainly affected his demeanour. It affected his on-court interview. I don't know if there's history between Djokovic and Darren Cahill that did the interview, but Darren Cahill's first question to Djokovic was, you feeling the love out here, Novak? And Djokovic said, I am now, because the crowd were cheering for him at that point, but it was very pointed. He's annoyed, I think. I think he's annoyed that they're not appreciating what he's trying to do and what they have the opportunity to be present for. And I get that. I get that. I also think so long as they remain respectful, the crowd have the right to support whoever they like. And I think today they were respectful. I didn't watch the whole thing. I don't think there was any booing for Djokovic or anything like that. And I think sort of both sides are right, really. He probably does deserve a bit more support, but equally, support who you like, so long as you're respectful. We've missed crowds.
Yeah.
We've missed, you know, the irrationality of crowds and the fact that, you know, thousands of people can rock up one day and watch somebody they'd never heard of 2 hours ago and, you know, be cheering for them like they're a family member in the moment. That is the joy of crowds. So, yeah, I see it from all sides. But it's an interesting one. He didn't do the Wonder Bra again.
Oh, did he not?
He did not. No. So 3 matches so far, and he's only done his trademark love to the crowd celebration once.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And he mentioned Jenison Brooksby, didn't he? In that press conference.
He's one of the guys that everyone's talking about in the locker room.
And then he stole Andy Murray's line of comparing him to Florian Meyer.
Yes, which everyone's doing as if, like, everyone knows who Florian Meyer is.
Yeah.
No offence, Florian Meyer. Us lot know who he is. But it's not, you know, he's not a touchstone.
Oh, God, no.
Yeah, he's never had so much airtime, Florian Meyer. but yet that is going to be very interesting, isn't he? And I still doing that because of Tennis Relived, I keep looking through Djokovic's drawer and thinking, who's going to be the Vinci? Not necessarily beating Djokovic, as Vinci did to Serena, but the one that you weren't expecting that does the thing that no one's expecting.
Mm. And someone he's not played before.
Mm.
Brooksby has quite a different game, I think, to a lot of players. He's got a quite unique style. I could see him causing some problems. I think Novak Djokovic will win, but Brooksby's got game and he's got something about him. And as you said, with the crowd behind him as well, that does feel like another little tricky match for Djokovic.
Matteo Berrettini won today in 5 sets over Ilya Ivashka.
Someone has stopped Ivashka. Not a sentence I thought I would be saying.
It took quite an effort to stop Ivashka, though.
Yeah.
It took an awful lot of cheering from that Italian chef that is the most, speaking of crowds, the most vociferous tennis supporter there has ever been.
Yeah, and I thought he was just a Matteo Berrettini supporter.
He is, isn't he?
Well, he was also at Jannik Sinner versus Gael Monfils, so he's clearly just an Italian tennis supporter because he was going, he was giving it big ones for Jannik Sinner as well.
Maybe that was just on his way out.
Popped in.
The crowd were going nuts for Matteo Berrettini on the Grand Slam court. Really great atmosphere out there. Another one of those that's sort of, as the sun's starting to set on a perfect New York day on Grand Slam, the crowd are going wild. Suddenly there's loads of people that seem to know who Ilya Ivashka is. Maybe they're fans of the Tennis Podcast. But it was really good fun. And Matteo Berrettini in Italian after the match gave a really, really great line, sort of showed off his fangs almost, didn't he? He said, let me get the translation, which is from Enrico Maria Riva on Twitter. I feel like I belong in the Zverev Medvedev team and Tsitsipas group, and I think they know it. I love that quote.
Yeah, I really do. Because I've found it quite hard to place Berrettini a little bit.
Fangs wise,
but also just where he sort of ranks in the pecking order. Mm. Is he part of that group or is he just outside? And
yeah,
honestly,
I realised I'd quite not forgotten about him, but wasn't thinking about him going into the US Open. I know he's not played much since Wimbledon, but he wasn't in my thoughts really at all.
No, same.
Whereas he very much was throughout Wimbledon. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and he's reached the last Grand Slam final. So he absolutely should be in that category, I think.
Mm. Berrettini will face in the next round Oscar Otter.
Yes.
Who wins the celebration contest for the day. He gave good scenes on court number 17 today. He beat 37-year-old Andrea Seppi. So somehow Oscar Otter winning is a victory for the movement. he's Mats Aslan Karatsev. He's Mats' new Aslan Karatsev. That's how we're selling him, folks.
Well, I mean, there are similarities in terms of a guy who has spent quite a number of years grinding away and suddenly has started having a result at a slam and has sort of entered people's consciousness and garnered quite a lot of attention. And it's not quite as sudden as Aslan Karatsev. That was, you know, really out of the blue. He has actually built to this, hasn't he? He won the first two sets against Zverev at Roland Garros. He played Murray at Wimbledon, and that was five sets. But yeah, I mean, he saved match points in two qualifying matches this tournament. You know, he very nearly didn't even make it into the main draw. He had quite a kind draw once he got into the main draw. I think his best win was probably Lorenzo Sonego, who's got quite a bit about him, and Seppi's obviously a good win. And yeah, he earns $265,000 for this run. I mean, that is completely life-changing.
Third qualifier into the men's round of 16, which I think is the most ever. Most for a long time. Going to confidently and vaguely say it's, at the very least, it's the most for a very long time. Yannick Sinner won today with the help of Monsieur Italian Chef. Monsieur is not Italian, that is French. Signor, no, Spanish.
Don?
Don, sure. With Don Italian Chef in the support camp. He won 6-4 in the fifth over Gael Monfils. He was not quite cruising, I don't think, against Monfils. Tight first set, 7-6, 6-2. I think he was a break-up sinner in the third.
He was.
It was all going swimmingly, and then Monfils made it about Monfils by the looks of things and started conducting proceedings and made it for everybody but Yannick Sinner. Wonderful.
Yeah, totally. We had some messages today from some tennis podcast listeners who were there, and you know, one of them was planning to head out to another court and just didn't because Gael Monfils started being Gael Monfils, and someone had been supporting Gael Monfils but never seen him play live, and just it was every bit as good as he expected it to be. I think the crowd were 90% for Monfils in that stadium. You know, I mean, they had nothing against Yannick Sinner at all, but they were swept up by what he was doing. He was four love down in the fourth set, Monfils. You know, after dropping the third, Sinner had really quite sort of coldly regained control of it, having, yeah, let it slip in the third. And Monfils reeled off six games in a row to win the fourth set, and the crowd was just, the noise was unbelievable in the Louis Armstrong Stadium. And then real credit to Sinner, actually, for getting it together again and being really resilient in that fifth set. I think for Sinner, he showed quite a lot of emotion. And, you know, when he dropped the fourth set, he banged the side of the court in frustration. And, yeah, I was impressed with his resilience to be able to overcome what Monfils was doing, and the crowd and the... And the level of tennis was fantastic. Really athletic rallies and lots of great shot making from both of them. Just another one to add to the list of excellent, excellent matches at this US Open.
Sinner now awaits the winner of tonight's yet-to-be-played match between Alexander Zverev and Jack Sock, which we expect to be Zverev, but Sock carries a 2-1 head-to-head into that. Zverev's serving stats, incidentally, ahead of that match for the tournament so far are fearsome. He hasn't even faced a break point yet. It's fearsome stuff. There are three other, so two other men's matches yet to be completed. When is an upset not an upset? Denis Shapovalov is losing to Lloyd Harris. Long way to go, just a set down, 4-4 in the second. And Riley Opelka is a set up on Nicholas Basilashvili as we come to you. Ash Barty is now a set apiece and a breakup in the third. So let's take you through the other women's matches that we've had today, starting with not only a straight sets win for Bianca Andreescu, but one that only took her 1 hour and 7 minutes. That's literally sort of less than a third of the length of several of the matches that she's played this year. 1 and 2 over Greet Minnan, which I know is a, you know, it's a decent draw, playing a lucky loser. But given the 2 years she's had and the fact that Bianca Andreescu has been able to make meals of pretty much anything, I think that's a very big result for her, actually. It's big for her to be into the second week of a slam. This slam, she's still never lost at the US Open.
Yeah, 10-0. And I think it was the performance she's been aiming towards, really. I mean, I think she's spoken very interestingly about trying to simplify her game and trying to be more efficient on the court. And this sort of this performance just embodied that change in mindset. And look, something needed to change for Andreescu. I didn't necessarily think it would have to be the way she played, but she was playing too many long matches. She was getting injured too often, and she won in spite of all that in 2019. And I think that's been difficult for her to then make an adjustment, because she thinks, well, I managed it in 2019. Why can't I still manage it now? But there's been a real realization. And yeah, I mean, look, it's not a drastic change of game style, but she's just ending points quicker. She's crushing the ball. She's not using all of the variety she has. I think she can still fall back on all that, which will be a great weapon for her going forward. And I think the real test of this shift in game style will be when she plays some higher-ranked opponents later in the tournament. But so far, so good for Andreescu, and she's really kind of glowing, actually, with just how happy she is to be properly in a tournament again for the first time in a while, certainly since Miami. Mm.
Coco was there.
Very there.
Didn't make as many appearances as we sometimes see. I think it was quite hot for her. It was the first Andreescu day session match, but she was still there. She's a trooper. Andreescu will now face Maria Sakkari in the fourth round. She's in the fourth round for the second consecutive year. She lost to Serena last year, didn't she? She looks a better player to me than the one that reached the fourth round last year. And you know, we were full of praise and admiration for her then, as I recall. But it wasn't even close against Petra Kvitova today. And okay, Kvitova didn't put up a huge amount of fight by the looks of things against Sakkari, but she looked at a bit of a loss. I really don't think of Sakkari as a big server, or certainly someone for whom the serve is a weapon, but I think she hit 9 aces today.
Wow.
And she said the serve was the biggest feature of that win. And obviously she was moving like a dream and doing everything right, and I think that's going to be really good. When they met in Miami, it was brilliant.
7-6 in the third, wasn't it?
It was absolutely brilliant. Probably Sakkari should have won that, actually.
Yeah, I think that's one of the many sort of matches that got away from Sakkari this season.
Yeah, and it is going to be interesting, because as well as Sakkari is playing, I do think she has a closing problem with tight matches. She's good at winning from losing positions. We saw that against Pegula in Miami, didn't we? But I do think she can also do the opposite and really tighten up from a winning position. And it's hard to see that one not being close somehow. So I think that's going to be very interesting. We've got Belinda Bencic against Iga Swiatek in the fourth round. That's a yes, please, isn't it?
Big time. I was quite excited for Pegula Bencic. And I must say it was quite disappointing.
Disappointing. And then I looked at their head-to-head and realised it was 2-0, and maybe it just doesn't work for Pegula for whatever reason. Yeah. I wasn't able to watch the match in much detail, but...
Well, that was my impression from watching some of it They met at the Olympics in the first round, actually, and obviously Bencic won that and went on to win the gold. But I didn't see that match, so I didn't know how it played out, and I just wasn't sure how they would match up. And the answer is exactly as you've said. Every shot Pegula hit just seemed to go straight to where Bencic wanted it to go, and it just looked such a one-sided matchup. It's confusing why some matchups work and some don't. You know, the way Pegula has caused Pliskova so many problems this year, and yet it just didn't work against Bencic. But I must say, Bencic is playing very, very well, and kind of similar to what we're saying about Berrettini, I have overlooked, I think, Belinda Bencic.
Big time. Wasn't in my predictions.
No, and, you know, she came into this on a winning streak and having just won the Olympic gold. But I didn't see that as a sort of career-turning moment for Bencic. I thought it might be a career-defining moment. And look, it could still be, but she's playing very well and she likes New York. She's had runs here before, and I think she's dangerous in this draw.
Karolina Pliskova is quietly making her way through straight sets tonight over Ayla Tomljanovic. She
hit 20 aces in that match.
This is a service paradise, this tournament. And yet it's also not a boring tournament being won by boring serving performances. I mean, should say neither of us are watching Riley Opelka against Nicolas Basilashvili right now. Maybe those that are would have a different view, but it seems to be a perfect court speed.
Yeah, and I think the conditions since the storm are actually perfect. Mary Carrillo was telling us how nice it's been in New York, kind of just gorgeous weather since that storm, and I think the humidity has gone out of the air a little bit, certainly these last couple of days. It might turn again, but yeah. And the other thing Pliskova's got is she's playing having saved a match point now, and I'm always fascinated by that. I think you see it so often, players end up winning tournaments having saved a match point along the way. There's something psychological that it does to you. And you know, she very close match in the second round where she saved that match point. She's come out and absolutely crushed Tomljanovic today.
She will likely face Pavlyuchenkova in the next round. She is yet to take to the court against Varvara Gracheva. That's later on tonight. Tomorrow's schedule, Sunday, starts on Ash with Svitolina against Halep.
Into that.
We're also into Dan Evans against Daniil Medvedev.
Very much.
Do expect Medvedev to win, but, it could be all sorts of pantomime fun, I think. It could be all the right kinds of aggro.
Yes, I remember they were due to meet in one of the lead-in tournaments for the US Open. I can't remember which one. And it ended up being Bublik Medvedev again. Bublik beat Evans.
Oh, yes.
And I remember really wanting it to be Evans Medvedev because Bublik Medvedev had been a letdown in terms of matches and pantomime aggro. And I thought Evans could bring it. And now we get the chance to see if he will.
Evans never lets us down. Under the lights on Arthur Ashe tomorrow night, it's Tiafoe against Auger Aliassime, which I'm very much here for. What I'm not here for is the women's match being put on after that.
It's just completely the wrong way around.
Yeah, ridiculous. I mean, there's just no way that's a quick match. And it's followed by Krejcikova Muguruza. And no one wants to see that getting onto court at 11 p.m, which is an entirely plausible scenario. We'll probably be up watching it, even if that is the scenario that plays out. Krejcikova Muguruza, goodness me. Louis Armstrong Stadium tomorrow starts with Botic van der Zandschulp against Diego Schwartzman. We promise that we'll do an Ilya Ivashka style deep dive on Botic van der Zandschulp if he beats Diego Schwartzman tomorrow, but we'll preserve our energy until that happens. Then there's Angelique Kerber against Leila Fernandez. It's going to be very interesting to see if she can back up that Osaka win. I'm finding Kerber irresistible at the moment. Mertens against Sabalenka, doubles partners.
Yes.
Sabalenka does tend to have her measure. And very much had the measure of Danielle Collins yesterday.
Yeah, that was sort of the match which didn't quite deliver on the hype. But Mertens got a very good win over Ons Jabeur.
There doesn't seem to be a night session on Lewis Armstrong tomorrow. I don't know if that's normal. But it's certainly not on the schedule I'm looking at on the US Open app. Goyovchik against Alcaraz. That is not before 5 p.m. on the grandstand court, following on from three doubles matches. And there must be another rogue singles match that I'm looking for somewhere, but it's not on the schedule. I'm confused by the schedule. Those are all the singles matches that are listed. Can Alcaraz back it up? It's such a different match because he's the favourite.
Yeah, but I think he can. I have a lot of faith in Alcaraz, and I think he can. I think Goyovchik's played an awful lot of tennis to this point. And Alcaraz, yes, he looked a bit physically in trouble in those latter stages, but it didn't impact his tennis, and I think he will.
Matt's Chris Clary style future credibility depends on Carlos Alcaraz. He wants to be able to say Chris Clary style in 20 years' time. There's one guy that I looked at and said he's definitely a future number one, and that was Carlos Alcaraz, and that was in Barcelona when he was 6 years old. I think he'll back it up as well. I do, and I'm sure if David were here, he would excitedly say that Alcaraz was going to back it up.
David
as well.
would be so cross with us if we took all the hype out of that with the Goyovchik.
We're not going to do it. We're not going to do it. Just for you, David. Get well soon. We miss you. We hope David will be back on the pod in the coming days. Seeing as he's not, though, I've got to do the housekeeping. We've got mascots. Zeus is with me. We had a strong start, Zeus. It's tailed off a little bit, but we're keeping gas in the tank for the strong finish. Scousel Mousel is Matt's. Rogue is David's. He had a good day yesterday with Francis Tiafoe, Rogue. Billie Jean is sponsored by Billie Jean King. She's in the teepee at the moment. The US Open is... It's a lot.
It is a lot. It's no joke, the US Open.
Chris Albert Lee is our executive producer and extremely top bloke. Lloyd Harris has taken the second set against Denis Shapovalov, one of our prediction. Oh, Matt's just smugly waved his hand. That's the prediction I wanted. I got left with the crumbs, the Jessica Pegula crumbs off the table. We have shout outs, Matt. Who are they for?
They're for Arvind
Palmer.
No evidence that it's not.
Thank you very much, Arvind Palmer / whatever other Arvind it might be. We like Arvind Palmer, and we like whatever alternative Arvind this might be.
We have Don Kinta.
Oh, like Don.
Like Don. Don Felipe.
Don. Thank you very much, Don. Much appreciated.
And we have Wright Brian.
You're absolutely sure that's the right way round?
Yes.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
I know what you mean. Yeah. Like Wright Thompson, the American sports writer.
It's a very American thing, isn't it? British, it's very un-British. It's very, very parochial British of me to question that. On that note, get well soon, David. Keep being brilliant, US Open, because it's shaping up to be a US Open that we do a relived show about in a few years'
time. The whole
tournament.
Yeah. And other people have said this is not an original point, but I think it's worth saying, this is without Serena, without Federer, without Nadal, without Team. We miss all those players. Their absence is felt. You know, Del Potro, Venus Williams, you can put all of these players in. But I think it's significant that we're talking about a great US Open and they're not here. You know, it's going to be okay when they are not around permanently.
Very good point. We don't need Federer back. We just need David back. Get well soon, David. Sign up to the newsletter, everyone. Tell your friends. Leave us an iTunes review. All of it. We'll speak to you tomorrow.
Hi.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.